You're listening to SBS On The Money with Ricardo Gonçalves.
Hi, everyone. It is your daily 10-minute business and finance news update for this Wednesday, the 30th of July. Welcome to the SBS On The Money podcast. It's a day where the Australian share market rose by about 0.6%. That's a near record. We'll have the details with Luke Larrative from Seneca Financial Solutions. And that's because inflation continued to ease further into the RBA's 2-3% target band. The headline rate at 2.1% for the June quarter, underlying at 2.7%. Some mixed news depending on where you looked. Food inflation remained high, with fruit and vegetable prices up 4.6% in the 12 months to June. The bird flu continues to hit egg prices, up 19% over the year, while coffee is more than 9% higher because of lower supply from overseas growing areas. In good news, though, services inflation is at its lowest level in 3 years as price growth eases for rents and insurance, new dwelling prices also slowing, while the biggest contributor to softer inflation was a huge 10% fall in petrol prices over the year. So to tell us more on what it means for interest rates, I spoke with Bessa Detter, the chief economist at William Buck. Bessa, with CPI easing to 2.1%, the Treasurer called it stunning progress on inflation. Firstly, is it? Because he even went as far as saying with inflation in the low twos, unemployment in the low fours, and 3 years of continuous economic growth, it's something no major advanced economy in the world has achieved.
Well, I guess first and foremost is that the headline rate of inflation is in the low twos, but we tend to focus on the underlying inflation rate, as does the Reserve Bank, because it dampens the impact of temporary price measures like subsidies, for example. And if we look at the underlying rate of inflation, it's 2.7%. So it's more or less in the high twos. Now, the Treasurer's combination of inflation in the target band, low unemployment and ongoing growth, I think they are favourable circumstances. If we take, for example, the United States, which is a major economy, the unemployment rate is actually a tad lower. Its preferred measure of inflation is exactly the same as our preferred measure of inflation. But growth went backwards in the March quarter, whereas growth for us went forwards, even though it was quite modest. But I'd also say that it's also what's driving that growth story. And if we look at Australia's growth story, it has been propped up by government spending and net overseas migration through population growth. And in fact, if we look at GDP, which is a measure of economic activity in per capita terms, which is stripping out population, that actually went backwards in the March quarter and has been shrinking for most of the last 2 years. And that does highlight that there are still some fragilities in the Australian economy.
If we take a closer look at today's inflation numbers, though, can we talk about where we are seeing price pressures easing and to what extent it really is helping consumers? Because, yes, petrol prices are down around 10% on the year, but food, for example, is remaining quite elevated, right?
Well, I think what matters is what does your dollar buy in terms of goods and services. So we need to think about wages growth adjusted for inflation. And if we do that, we've recently started to see a modest recovery, but it hasn't gone back to where it was prior to the pandemic. And that's why some consumers might still be feeling the pinch. In terms of some key categories, as you mentioned, Ricardo, food, look, food prices did go up, in particular for fruit and veggies, and also eggs. In fact, eggs grew by 19.1% in the year to the June quarter, which is the sharpest pace in 29 years. But for both of those groups, there are special factors that have driven those prices higher. There was weather-related events in New South Wales and Queensland earlier this year that have impacted fruit and veggie prices. And also with eggs, there was the outbreak of the bird flu last year, which we're still feeling the effects of that through the egg producers. Fuel prices, as you mentioned, at the Bowser did drop. So that's helping our pockets be a bit lighter. But and then in my household, Ricardo, unfortunately, snacks and confectionery and coffee, which I probably have too much of, have seen rapid price increases.
Yeah, not just your household, Bess, the same as mine. You mentioned governments earlier. Government rebates have helped ease cost of living pressures, rent, electricity, childcare, for example, and the ABS has also recognised this. They constantly talk about childcare and electricity, but obviously that these rebates can't last forever. So to what extent are they artificially reducing the inflation rate, or will they have a lasting effect, do you think?
Well, their purpose was really to provide cost of living support to consumers during the height of the cost of living crisis. So some of these rebates are now rolling off. So we've seen the rebates rolling off in Queensland and WA. And so this is the last quarter for those state subsidies that will, you know, see the impact come through to the inflation rate. Federally, the electricity subsidies will be halved in the second half of this year, starting 1 July, and then that fully rolls off at the end of this year. So that does impact that headline rate of inflation that I spoke about earlier, and that's why it is important to focus on underlying inflation, which dampens the impact of these temporary measures. Subsidies won't, or these cost of living support won't permanently have an impact on inflation unless they're permanent or unless you have structural reform. And some of these are not permanent and they're not through structural reform, and therefore you'll just see those temporary effects mostly feeding through that headline rate.
What about the US tariffs? Are we seeing any impact on these tariffs in these results? Because didn't the RBA a few months ago initially say that they expect US tariffs to be deflationary in Australia?
Look, I don't think we're seeing a lot of signs in the data yet, certainly not in the inflation data that we saw today for the June quarter. And that's probably not to be unexpected given the bulk of the announcements on tariffs were on Liberation Day early in April. And then later, the US government did pause that for 90 days to 9 July, and that pause has later been extended to 1 August. There have been some sectoral announcements around steel and copper, for example, that impact the Australian economy. But I think perhaps where we are seeing more of an impact, Ricardo, is through the currency. So tradables inflation in the June quarter rose by only a very small amount. And that's because the Australian dollar against a basket of the currencies that it does the most, against the basket of currencies associated with the countries that we do the most trade with, it has appreciated. In particular, the Aussie dollar has appreciated against the US dollar in the June quarter because, of course, the US dollar has really sold off quite sharply as market sentiment has moved against the US dollar because of the tariff announcements of what it means for the US economy and what it means for uncertainty. So I think we're seeing a few signs there in terms of tradables inflation. The Reserve Bank has made an assessment that those tariffs will be disinflationary for Australia, and we agree with that assessment, and that there are downside risks to world economic growth.
Okay, and so with this CPI figure, the quarterly figure being really the last piece of the jigsaw puzzle that the RBA is looking at when it comes to discuss interest rates in mid-August, what do you think now it'll do?
Look, I think the data really seals the fate for an August rate cut. The outcome for underlying inflation was bang in line with the Reserve Bank's forecasts. Now, in July, I thought the RBA could have cut the cash rate. I thought they had enough data to do so. But it was quite clear from the rhetoric from the governor that the RBA wanted to be cautious and wanted to keep to a gradual easing path. They were, I think, waiting for today's quarterly inflation data to confirm that their inflation forecasts are on the right track. And they received that today. And so I do expect they will deliver a rate cut when they next meet in August. I then expect two more rate cuts from the Reserve Bank in November and in February. Again, just sticking to that cautious and gradual approach that they seem to favour.
That's Bessa Detta there, the Chief Economist at William Buck.
Now, Market Day on the SBS On The Money podcast.
Okay, a quick look at the Australian share market now, which rose 0.6%. The S&P ASX 200 closing just within a whisker of a record high. For the details, I spoke with Luke Laridoff, the CEO of Seneca Financial Solutions. Luke, how did the equities and currency markets react to the inflation data? Why? And what's the market now pricing in terms of a potential rate cut in August and beyond?
Yeah, CPI came in at 2.1%, which is like a four-year low, Ricardo. And, you know, this lower inflation's kind of been driven by lower fuel prices and an easing building costs, which is certainly pleasing. But, you know, the likelihood of getting a rate cut is now 100% priced by the market. And the market's now, in fact, actually expecting further cuts in, you know, November, February, May. So it is really a falling rates environment now. That's pretty positive for a lot of companies on the ASX and equities more broadly. Certainly those rate-sensitive property, infrastructure, growth stocks are all going to be doing really well. And we're seeing lots of opportunities at the moment in the technology sector, the mining sector, as well as some of the property adjacencies. You know, and some of these other stocks that are a bit more fully priced, like the banks and the supermarkets, probably going to be the funding source, and people are going to be selling those and moving into some of these more rate sensitive areas. So definitely a cyclical kind of upswing, I think, on the cards, and falling inflation and you know, falling rates is positive for equities.
So positive for equities, even though the ASX 200 is at or near a record high, does it warrant really being there, especially given all the global uncertainties we're seeing playing out with tariffs from the US, for example?
Yeah, markets typically climb the wall of worry, as they say. And, you know, I'm sure you probably would be surprised to hear we've had 135 52-week highs on the ASX over the last 10 years. So it's not unusual for the market to be trading at a new high. In fact, it's, you know, borderline our baseline assumption that the markets are going to move higher. I think it's what drives those indices higher. It's a more interesting question and really what separates a good investor from a bad one. And I think in this market, investors need to be careful about overpaying for businesses that, you know, have had historically good performance and maybe neglecting valuation work and the cyclical upswing we're about to see in some of these names outside the ASX 20. So there's definitely opportunities there. I don't think it's you've missed out or anything like that. And, you know, we baseline expect the markets to continue to move higher.
Okay. Which stocks and sectors are currently driving it higher? Because for a while there, we saw the likes of Commonwealth Bank, for example, you know, hitting record highs consistently over the first part of the year. But while it's up today, it's down around 7% from its recent peak.
Yeah, and it's underperformed the rest of the market by about 5% over the last month. So there's definitely signs of sort of the negative momentum starting to build around that valuation story, which at, you know, 4x price to book is obscene. It's the only way you can describe it. So it is the banks moving higher today due to that kind of interest rate sensitivity. And we're seeing other rate sensitives move in a similar fashion today, like your, you know, transurban type businesses with stable yield and, you know, stable income. But yeah, as I said, I do think it is these cyclicals where the real opportunity is for investors.
And finally, reporting season is nearing. Some companies have preempted with a few updates. Is the market preparing for good or bad earnings results here in Australia?
I think, again, and I'll probably sound like a little bit of a broken record today, but it is a real case-by-case situation across different sectors. You know, we've already seen during confession season, the last sort of 6 or 8 weeks, the retail sector getting absolutely torched. You know, Ascent Group, Step One, Bapcor, Satire, all downgrading earnings guidance. You really want to be out of those consumer discretionary names. But across the rest of the market, you know, we're sort of cautiously optimistic. It's, as I said, there's opportunities in some of these beaten up tech names that are still growing quite well, but the market's disregarded due to a lack of profitability, which is now starting to appear. I think avoiding these overvalued companies, these really expensive names for what you're getting in terms of growth, was a key driver to outperforming in the February reporting season. And I think it's going to be same playbook again this reporting season in August, and just avoiding those really expensive, overvalued names where there's a lot of chance that the earnings that are built into the price aren't going to be met.
That's Luke Larrative there from Seneca Financial Solutions. That wraps up the podcast for this Wednesday, the 30th of July. Rio Tinto profits out today too after the markets close. We'll take a closer look at that tomorrow. Don't forget to like and subscribe on Spotify and Apple Podcasts.
This SBS On The Money stream is provided for informational purposes only. The content in this stream should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and it does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.
This SBS On The Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only. The content on this podcast should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.